Welcome to Series 4 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today. This week on My Life in Design, I'm here with Jim Sutherland. Jim started his career at The Partners before moving to HGV Design and then becoming one of the founding partners of Hattrick. He went on to set up Studio Sutherland in 2014 and has worked on brands such as Startright Shoes, Royal Mail, Agatha Christie Limited, Natural History Museum, London Fire Brigade, Kew Gardens, British Heart Foundation, Prostate Cancer UK, Wimbledon, Norwich University of the Arts. And Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. Can we start at the beginning of your kind of childhood stroke designing career, basically? Yeah. When did you find out design was a thing that you could base a career around? Like, what made you want to become a designer?
I think that's quite a complicated question in some ways. I knew nothing, obviously, because of my age, you know, design wasn't taught in schools at that point. I was quite good at drawing.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, quite a traditional way of getting into design.
Definitely.
So I didn't really know much about design at all, but I was good at drawing. And so I really wanted to do that as much as possible at school. And then my dad joined me to a book club, probably when I was about 14 or 15, which was one of these things that you paid a sort of certain subscription and they sent you a number of books.
I remember them. Yeah, absolutely.
And it was an art book club. And one of the ones that came was a Bob Gill book called Forget All the Rules About Graphic Design.
Oh, wow.
And I remember looking at that thinking, not really understanding it was a job that you could do, but enjoying it as a book. And then the other book I got was Ideas on Design, which was a pentagram book from the same sort of period. And the same thing applied, and I've still got both copies of those books. So I think that was probably my introduction to it existing as a thing.
It's a good introduction.
But very not thinking sentence. I would do that, just thinking, you know. So then what really happened at my school was quite an academic school and I was very middle of the road, you know, all the way through.
Yeah.
Until I got to do my O-levels. And then in my O-levels, weirdly, I did really well in them.
Mm.
And
really?
Unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And I'd already decided I was going to do art, maths and physics for my A-levels.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't academic, but I liked the sort of math science side as well as art, which was a strange combination. But I remember going back in to start the A-levels and I got taken aside by the deputy head saying, you know, congratulations, you've done really well in your O-levels. You don't have to do art anymore. You can do a proper subject.
Wow. That's crazy, isn't it? That's so common.
I know. And I was obviously very young and also very shy and didn't really say a lot, especially to grown-ups and things.
Yeah.
And so I remember thinking, well, I want to do art, you know, I like doing art, you know. And they were it was a lot of pressure, basically. And he said, I've rewritten your timetable and you're now doing maths with statistics. There was another maths. There was lots of maths, basically, physics. And then you can do art on a Friday afternoon. And I remember thinking, okay. And he gave me this piece of paper. It wasn't like a decision, a choice. It was just, here's your new timetable. So I went back to my art teacher, Mr. Pepper, and said, I don't really want to do this. I don't mind doing maths and physics as well, but I want to have more time doing art.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I think you should turn up to the lessons and then I'll have a word with them. And I said, okay. And I went back. And then I decided just to stick to my original timetable. And they never mentioned it again.
Really? Brilliant.
So it was a very strange, I felt really, there was something in me that just thought, no, I want to do art.
Yeah.
And I kept expecting someone to turn up and say, right, stop doing that and go back and do maths with statistics. And it's interesting that if I hadn't had that drive somewhere in me, I could easily now be doing maths with statistics.
Oh, my God, can you imagine?
which I, you know, I did, yeah, I did. I did like maths, you know, and I think it's led me to a lot of the work that I do. There's the logical sense is there, I think.
But that's one of the things I love about design and graphic design and the brand side of things, that it melts those two sides.
Yeah, exactly.
I did chemistry, biology,
oh, okay,
maths at school and then university.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go into that as a career, but yeah. you use all those scientific yeah. analysis yeah. paths, basically, don't you?
So we did that. And then I then tried to work out what courses to go to university. It's not entirely true, but no one really in my family had been to university before.
Yeah.
And my dad had left school when he was 13. He was really keen that we all went to university.
Yeah, same.
Me and my two brothers. My eldest brother went to university for about 6 weeks and then left and became a postman.
Oh, wow.
And then my other brother went to catering college and got thrown out. So it got to me, and I think my dad at that point was quite just keen that I went somewhere.
Yeah.
So I applied, and because I was relatively academic, I applied to some universities. I applied to, I'm trying to think where it was now, but I applied to a few places that did sort of art history, which was a way of the school. The school were very keen on Oxbridge.
So it's still an academic subject,
they wanted
so to
it,
speak.
Yes, then, exactly, yeah, to study okay. the history of it rather than practical.
Yes.
And then I realised that all those courses at universities weren't very practical. It was a similar, you can do it on Friday afternoon and the rest of the week you've got to study the history of art.
Yeah.
And then at the same time I applied to art schools as they existed then, but again was very much frowned on at the school. It's like, well, that's not a proper place to go. And again, this is back, late mid-80s, I suppose.
I don't think it's changed huge amounts.
No, I don't think so.
Design's taught more.
Yeah, I think what's changed now, which I understand, I think I'm not sure I'm happy with in some ways, but I went to Norwich School of Art because it was a school of art then, which I really enjoyed, been there for, hundreds of years and things. Now that's Norwich University of the Arts. And they've had to all become universities to survive, I think.
Yeah.
But there's something about that specialism for me, a little bit has gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bit of a shame,
Yeah.
In some ways, but I understand, and it's still an amazing course. So So I applied to Norwich School of Art. I applied to Brighton University. Well, no, was it? No, it was Brighton. Was that Brighton School?
University
of
Sussex, and there's Brighton University.
Yeah, no, so it was part of Brighton. It wasn't part of the university.
Yeah.
So it might have been Brighton Poly then or something.
Probably was, yeah.
Mid-80s.
Before I moved there.
So I applied to the two of them. I don't really know how. Somebody must have given me some advice because they were both really good courses. I applied to do illustration because I didn't know graphics was a thing that you could study, really. And then I went for my interview at Brighton, and I didn't do a foundation course. So I talked to my dad about it, and he said, you've got to wear your school uniform and everything. Look really smart. So I turned up to my interview at Brighton. I've got a terrible memory of some of these things, but my interview at Brighton, I sat in the middle of this, on this bench. One side was a guy with not wearing any socks playing the guitar. And the other side was this girl who was a goth, just all black makeup and black clothes. There's me in my school uniform with my
portfolio. That's really cute. And,
I just remember thinking, I don't think I'm going to get in here. And so, but I'd also applied to Norwich, which I have no memory of at all, the interview or anything. But I went with my school uniform again, so because I thought that's what you were supposed to do.
My parents would have told me to do that. Look smart.
No, totally. Look smart. And that's the only thing I had. So, and then somehow I didn't get into Brighton, and somehow I got into Norwich. Not knowing, actually, it was a really good course.
Yeah.
And then so I turned up at Norwich to start and then realised very quickly that everybody on the illustration course were better than my teachers at school in terms of drawing.
Oh, wow.
And so I had this sudden, it's not really an epiphany because it wasn't a good thing, of thinking, shit, I'm nowhere near good enough to do this, and started to wonder what I should do.
Yeah. I've not spoken to many people who went to art school, university or some course, who didn't get there and think, oh my God.
Well, obviously you're then in the people that were all the best people at art at their schools.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Whereas if you could draw a bit at school, you were pretty much pretty good at drawing.
Yeah.
I started at Norwich. And to be fair, I got better at drawing. And the first year was a bit like a foundation course. So for me, that was really helpful. We did lots of different things, some of which was design.
Mm.
And then I almost realised it was a design and an illustration course, which I hadn't quite twigged when I'd signed up for it. And then the second year got better and I started to think, oh, I quite like doing this. Still had no sense of if you could do it as a job, but didn't really worry about that.
Did you get much involvement to that side? Did you get industry figures coming in and talking?
Yeah,
and
we had. Yeah. So at that point, which I think is partly why I go and teach a bit now, do talks, because we met a few people came up. So Sean came up from the partners at the time.
Okay.
We had Tom Eckersley come up. We had, who else came up? Quite a lot of people would come. But I was still very naive about it being an industry. I was just having a nice time.
Yeah.
You know, generally.
Yeah.
And yeah, perhaps, yeah,
having a good time. Too much.
Possibly.
That sounds familiar.
Possibly. But a lovely environment. I wish I'd made more of it looking back.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, anyway. And it was a small, it's a lovely place, Norwich. The course was brilliant. It was a small school of art, so you got to mix with lots of different people.
Yeah, that's good.
So all that was really good. And then we started our third year, and that's when I met Ray Gregory, who was the head of the third year, and that changed everything. And he was a designer that worked at Manali Tassfield in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly thought, I'd love to do this as a job, you know, and is that a possibility?
Oh, brilliant.
So the last year was just this amazing sort of experience.
Yeah.
Of just doing design work, doing as many projects as I could fit in, which has carried on.
So doing like university projects, yeah, I can tell that.
Yeah, well, university doing university projects, but then any other projects that came along, I did those as well.
It was like outside paid stuff as well?
Not really paid. Was it paid?
Just bits you can help out with.
And... Yeah, just bits I could help out with any competitions that came up. I just did every single project.
Yeah.
And I remember them saying at the beginning of the year that he said, on average, you need sort of 6 to 8 projects in your portfolio. So that's what you need to aim for. He was very experienced. He'd only just started teaching like 2 years full time, but he taught a bit before that. He'd been to the Royal College. He's still around, obviously, but
yeah,
he was brilliant. And when I left, I had like 25 projects in my folder.
Wow.
I'd just done so much. I have very little, not patience, but I just want to get on to the next thing as quickly as possible. That hasn't changed.
Yeah, you can still see that. That's brilliant, though.
So meeting him was a moment, absolutely, when I look back. And he was really encouraging. He was quite hard. He was quite full on. You know, if things weren't right, he would tell you. He would throw things around. It's probably not what happens now, I suspect. But he was...
Yeah, I suspect it hopefully doesn't.
No, exactly. It's not really that, but it was more just the fact he was so inspiring.
But passionate.
All. Passionate,
that
exactly.
Totally. Yeah. Where did you start applying? Did you have to move to London? Did you?
So I didn't know. I knew nothing about the design industry other than people like Sean had been in. But I wasn't really, I just wanted to do loads of work. So I wasn't really looking up. Almost when I look back, I wasn't looking up. I was just, I want to do this project. There's another project to do that.
Yeah.
With no aim of what that would lead to. I did a couple of placements in the second year in the summer.
Where are they? Are they?
They were at a company called Negus & Negus, who were really... at that point, quite well-known corporate identity. They'd done British Airways and things.
Yeah.
And I think Dick Negus, he was just about to retire. Very old school sort of place up in King's Cross. It was a good experience, but I was so painfully shy. I didn't talk to anybody for 3 weeks or something. I just sat in the corner doing things.
It can be hard, can't it?
It was awful.
Point.
It was awful. Yeah. Actually, if I think about it. Anyway, let's not think about that. And then there was another one at some pharmaceutical design advertising agency. I don't know.
Wow, so
how that
super
happened.
Corporate.
Super corporate. And they were just doing ads for, you know, drugs for angina and things like this.
Yeah.
And I had quite a nice time. I quite enjoyed myself. They went out drinking all the time at lunchtimes. It was a different period of time.
It was a different period. That sounds like my early days.
And I was there for like 3 or 4 weeks, I think, over the summer, getting paid. So that was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought, God, you get paid to do this. Looking back, it's quite, you know, interesting. And then they wanted me to stay on. And I just remember thinking, I want to have a bit of a break before I go back to the third year. So I did.
So the placement thing worked out well. And then how did you find out about roles out there that you could go for?
So I, in that point about just looking down instead of looking around, obviously this is all pre-internet and things like that, so it's more difficult to find studios and things. I didn't even think about applying to studios. I just concentrated on doing my portfolio.
Yeah.
I did a letterhead, which obviously doesn't really exist anymore as a thing. I did a letterhead. We had a crit with Ray. He said that it was really good. It's not his exact words, but there was a bit more swearing involved. And so I had this letterhead printed and I thought, great, I've done the letterhead. That's all I need to do. And then he came over to my desk and he said, right, you know, who are you going to write to? And I sort of looked at him and he went, you have to write to people with your letterhead.
No one's going to find you.
So I said, oh, right. You know, I was really scared of him, I have to say. My life is full of people I'm scared of, actually, thinking about it. But anyway.
You can be scared and inspired at the
yes,
same time,
exactly,
can't you?
Exactly.
Like, I've had lots of that. That's all,
So he said, go over to the library, look at a D&ED annual. There's a whole set of them. Never heard of them. And this is, you know, 2 months before I'm about to leave a university or school of art. So I said, okay. So I went and found them. And that year, which funny enough, I've got a copy of now, Craig Oldham bought it for me.
Oh, really?
Enough. Yeah, sent it to me. And I got this green annual out and I looked through it, wrote some names down, went back to the studio. So I'm sitting there about 10 minutes later, having been over to the library. And Ray said, what are you doing here? I said, I've been over to the library. I want to go and work at the Partners.
Yeah.
Because they had something like 25 bits of work in the annual that year.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't, can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
You can't write to one fucking company. I said, oh, right. I said, okay. So I went back over to the library, found some other companies, but there were only a sort of handful because the Partners literally had so much in there. And so I went back to the studio. I spent as much time in the library as I could before I went back. And then I wrote to the Partners, and they wrote to Carter Wong, Lambie Nairn, what were they called then? Robinson Lambie Nairn, Martin Lambie Nairn's company. And I think one other, or maybe I just sent three letters, basically. And,
the sort good of, companies.
The, oh, no, amazing companies, but the naivety of it, really, looking back. And then sat there and typed these letters on a manual typewriter.
Oh, wow.
Fucked it up quite a lot and used another one of my letterheads. So I had this little box of letterheads from Prontoprint of like, you know, 100 of them. I only ever used three. So... And it is actually still quite a nice letterhead, but anyway. So I wrote, posted these three letters off, waited for a reply. And I'd put James Sutherland because my dad had said, you can't write Jim.
You've got to sound formal.
You've got to sound formal.
Definitely.
So it's all full of things like this, you know.
Did you address it like Dear Sirs?
Yeah, of course I did.
Yeah, yeah.
You can imagine, probably, you know, Dear Sir, Madam. You know, probably not even Madam because it was the 80s.
So yes.
But wrote these three letters off and just... you know, got my portfolio together, did my degree show and things like that, and then sort of waited. And then a few weeks later, I got a letter back from all three saying they would see me.
Brilliant.
So you had to phone them up, which I was really nervous about using the phone.
Yeah.
So I'd phone them up and worry about that a lot and then get through to them, make an appointment. And I went for the three interviews. Again, I don't remember the other two particularly, although I didn't get offered jobs there. But I went to the Partners and saw Nick Wuer, who was one of the founding partners then, who's sadly passed away now, but saw him, really nice guy. Turned up in my, I'd got over my school uniform incident, but my dad had told me to wear a suit. So I went and bought a suit from Oxfam for £3, grey suit, which is awful, and sat in the Partners reception. And again, this is the 80s, thinking all I want to do is have a cigarette because I was so nervous.
Yes.
Thinking, I wonder if you can smoke in here, you know. And obviously.
God, that feels so alien, the idea of, my first job, you could smoke inside.
Well, totally. And HGV, so we smoked in the studio.
Yeah.
My Partners was never really like that.
Yeah.
So I had my interview with Nick. I was literally so nervous. I was spilling tea all over the floor because my hand was shaking so much. I was literally all over the place in a terrible sort of state. He asked one of the other partners up to see my portfolio. So I remember thinking, oh, that's quite a good sort of sign. And then he said to me, this is the worst typographic folder I've ever seen.
Wow.
Right? And I thought, I remember thinking to myself, I'm not sure that's a good point to make, you know.
Yes.
But he said it's got so many ideas in it that it's incredible. He was so he was so positive about it, ignoring the first comment, which is, you know, which is interesting.
He could see beyond the presentation.
He could see beyond
basically.
The, yeah. Because it was all over, but there were so many projects. It would just, he just went on and on and on, you know. And then I left, and then about 2 weeks later, he phoned up and said, we're still considering your, you know, is there anybody else on your course that's any good? So I recommended a few people, thinking I don't want them to get a job.
Yeah, you told me I've got one first.
Yeah, and then I went, then he asked me to go back for another chat, and we had this chat, and they basically offered me a job. So
brilliant.
That was 1988. They were obviously very good. I don't think I realised how good they were and how good it would be for me.
Yeah.
And they said at that point, which I think has changed now, that I genuinely was useless at lots of things, but I was very good at thinking.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the other partners saying, we're at a size now, they were about 30, I think, at that point.
Oh, wow. Still quite small.
So still quite small. They're only 4 years old, 5 years old at that point,
four years
probably. He said that they could afford to take people on who are good at typography or good at something, but not necessarily fully rounded designs.
Yeah.
And I obviously wasn't in the typography camp at that point.
Yeah.
So, that was basically when I started. So then I started there. And again, I would hide if my phone went. I would go to the toilet and things. It was awful. It was awful.
How did you get over it? I think it sounds must be common to lots of young people.
I was so driven that I wanted to do the design. I realised everything else was a sort of necessary evil.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, I've just got to practice. I used to go back to my old course. Ray invited me back to do some talks, which were horrendous. You know,
I must have been
absolutely. He gave me a pointer one day and said, this is all slides and things. It was all, again, different era. But
yeah.
He gave me a pointer one day and said, this might be useful. She could point. It was a big sort of lecture theatre. And I just remember holding it up and it was moving like 6 feet across this screen because I was shaking so much.
Oh, wow.
And I just remember thinking, I'll put that down and not use that.
Yes.
And then after a while, I think I found, and it's something I've kept going all the way through, that the more I practiced at doing talks and the more I hid behind the work and the partner's work and the work we're doing was good, I could get through the embarrassment of everything else because what I was showing was good.
Yeah.
So I'm useless at presenting anything that I don't believe in or think is good. I can't sell anything to anybody that I don't think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, of course.
But that has helped me now.
That's a really good thing, isn't it? You don't want to be selling things that aren't the right thing, but fortunately your ideas are...
Yeah, but I'm almost forced into that place because I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's... I'm thinking about this now. I think
that's a pretty good point.
You know. Yeah, and also I think my enthusiasm for... I love doing this. And I think that comes across, however badly you present things, however you're dressed in a £3 suit, any of those things don't matter as much as the work. Yeah, the work in the portfolio is obviously dated now, but was good. There was good stuff there. So my approach of having my head down and ignoring everything else sorted, well, it has worked.
Yeah.
But it's not, I wouldn't recommend buying your suit from Oxfam.
Yeah, definitely.
Personally, or wearing a suit, actually. That's it. And I wore that suit to work for about 2 weeks when I started.
Did you?
And then somebody came over to me.
I realised that no one else was.
Somebody came over. I was still looking down at that point, staring at my shoes. Somebody just came over and said, you don't have to wear a suit if you don't want. I was thinking, oh, okay, I won't wear a suit then. So I didn't.
That's really sweet. I think I threw out my last suit that I still had hanging in the cupboard about 15 years ago after realising I was never going to wear a suit again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely. So where did you go from there? That was HGV.
So I stayed there for... I told myself when I left college that I would stay somewhere for 2 years and then move to get more experience.
Yeah.
So after 2 years, I went for loads of interviews secretly. And then I kept going for them. And again, this was all in pre-internet days. It was difficult to find places and you had to write them letters and it's all very surreptitious and sneaking around my portfolio. And then I kept going to places thinking the partners is doing better work than this place. And so I just put my portfolio away and just carried on working at partners, which was the best decision I made, I think.
Yeah.
Stayed there for another 5 years, became a senior and things there.
Uh-huh.
And then I'd been there 7 years and I thought I just need to have a change.
Yeah.
I went to a recruitment agency, two recruitment agencies. Again, this was all surreptitious, which is, I just think, the way the world sort of works, you know. By that point, Lucy had been born.
Yeah.
My daughter. I had no money, which was part of the reason I wanted to move. And so I started looking around. I went for about 25 interviews over the period of about 4 months.
Yeah.
In the evenings and things like this, because I just didn't know where to go. The partners were really good and I kept thinking, oh, is that
what
place
is
good? Yeah.
Going to give me something else for...
And then the last place I saw was a company called Halpin Gray Vermeer,
mm-hmm.
who shortened to HGV in the end, who were a much smaller company and I really liked their work. I hadn't really heard of them and I just thought I could go here and actually sort of make a difference of some kind.
Yeah, mould it a bit for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So I found that quite interesting because I'd been to see Pentagram, I'd been to see Lipper Pierce, I'd been to some Design Bridge. I had an interview there. I just went to see lots of people, which was really useful.
Yeah.
And again, this is all pre-internet, so that you would get there and you'd see the work that they'd done.
Yeah.
You'd see it in design annuals and things. It was the only way to sort of do it. So I accepted the job at HGV, which so it was only like five people. And funny enough, was just as an aside that not because Lucy was born, but when Lucy was born, we literally didn't have any money at all. She was born about a year and a half after I left college. And
wow.
So my wife and I, who I'd met at Norwich,
yeah,
which wasn't my wife then, but
yeah,
we were together, you know, had been together a few years. She gave up work and I was on a salary of 12 grand at that point.
Wow.
So we were on 6 grand each.
Oh my God.
Living in South London in a rented flat. With a baby.
Bloody hell.
And so it's sort of relevant to what happened later in some ways, because so what I ended up doing was working for my brother, who's a builder, at weekends doing labouring jobs and things.
Wow, okay.
And then in the evenings, I would go and work at another design company one or two evenings a week.
Wow, really?
As a sort of freelancer.
Yeah, okay.
So I'd leave the partners at... The partners generally had a good culture of not working late at that point.
That's quite rare in those times,
yeah,
isn't it?
In those times. But they had some days we worked late.
Yeah.
But on the days they didn't, I would leave there at sort of 6, walk up the road, go to this packaging company, work there till 11.
Wow.
And then get a train home. And only like, you know, perhaps twice a week. But obviously the money, that money was just invaluable because I wasn't getting paid very well at the partners. You know, because I was still a junior and things. And yeah. So, but I think what it did was give me this, it didn't give it to me because I had it already, but it emphasised this sort of mad work ethic,
yeah,
that I have. Of if we didn't have any money, I'd go and earn some more,
yeah,
rather than save. I think that's perhaps my approach to yes, financial. Yes. And because I like doing the work, I would go up to this company and do some packaging work, which was, I found quite easy to do. I liked yeah. doing it. And then he'd give me, you know, a few hundred quid in cash sort of thing. So it was, and then same with working with my brother, it was really good fun. You know, yeah. we'd get on with my brother. So I'd go and do that at weekends. I mean, it was madness, but obviously it was just what we needed to do at yeah. that point. And Beck had lots of part-time jobs as well. And just the way we sort of got through stuff. And that didn't really change, if I'm honest, until I moved to HGV.
Was that the point where you started to earn enough?
Started to earn a bit more, yeah.
That?
And then Jessica was born a week after I left the partners. So I left the partners on the Friday, started work at HGV on the Monday, and Jess was born on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And again, in those time, I took Thursday, Friday off and went back to HGV on the
Monday.
So you
didn't have like 2 weeks or...
No, nothing.
Even
so.
Shared.
But it wasn't yeah. what happened then, you know. And obviously Beck bore the brunt of all of that, of having to look after
yeah,
the kids.
Yeah, of course.
Home. And then, but that time, starting to work at HGV was really, again, really good. Pierre was an amazing designer. John Gray sort of was the managing director of the company. He was really mm. good. I learned loads and stayed there for another 7 years, basically.
Wow.
So I became creative director there, did lots of really nice work. The profile of HGV, you know, rose a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think what was so good about HGV is that it was a really good company. They were just a bit anonymous.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's not one of the big ones I've heard of.
No, but it became Patrick, yeah. more well known as you know, not just through me, but we attracted better people and all
yes.
those sorts of things. And I still know quite a lot of the designers from that period then. So.
Then how did Hattrick come about?
So then I started to think that I wanted to go back to the idea of setting up. We'd become a bit more financially stable, although
yeah.
not overly, but enough sort of thing. And then two friends that I'd met at the partners, Dave Kimpton and Gareth Howard. We saw each other a lot socially, talked about setting up together. And so we did that in 2001. And obviously at that point, I had two kids. We'd bought a house. I still had no money, like savings yeah. and things. They were much more sensible, so they had savings to put in and stuff like that. I didn't have anything. We had no clients. but there was just a sort of enthusiasm for this will work,
yeah.
won't it? And I had a plan. I was doing a bit of teaching then, that perhaps I could do some teaching. I could always go and do more packaging work or work for my brother.
Yeah.
So we're still doing some of that stuff if we need it, sort of thing.
How did you get clients then? What did you do?
Well, we wrote a list of all the people we knew that might be able to give us some work.
Yeah, good stuff.
I didn't really have any because all the people I knew were builders and things. We could do their letterheads and stuff.
Yes.
But that was pretty much
it. It's not going to pay the bills.
But Gareth and Dave had a lot more contacts from where they'd worked before and things like that. I had none, and I was very keen not to take any clients with me from HGV.
Yeah.
I think that wasn't the right thing to do. So, and Dave and Gareth were the same. But so even though I had some quite good client relationships a bit at that point, I didn't really want to approach any of them. So
yeah, that's fair enough.
So we did start with nothing and just gradually did work for sort of favours for people we knew or Dave and Gareth knew, to be fair. And then gradually built up the profile a bit and then started to get on pitch lists for things. And then if I'm really honest, it it just suddenly took off.
Wow.
To a ridiculous extent.
Was there one project or client?
I think there was probably a couple. Well, in fact, there's probably three just to touch on. Firstly, the Salvation Army got in touch about a big signage project for their new building.
Oh, okay.
And they did that through Dave, was a member of the Chartered Society of Designers.
Yeah.
And had met an architect who was working on the project, and he put us on this list.
Wow.
And at that point, we were asked to pitch, and it was just, it wasn't like ideas for the project, but it was, you know, what your credentials are and things like that. So we'd done, Gareth had done some signage for the Photographers' Gallery. I'd done a pet shop in Highgate. David done shopping centre in Slough. And that was literally three signage projects.
Wow.
That we'd done. And so we were looking at this thinking, this isn't going to help us. So we got a load of signage books and scanned them in. And we said right at the beginning of the presentation, we're not going to talk about our work. We're going to talk about your project.
Yes.
And here's some examples of signage we haven't done. We're very honest about it. We hadn't done these projects. And we'll show you that this is the sort of things we think you could be doing.
Yeah.
Went to the pitch. Dave and I went to the pitch. At this point, I was getting better at presenting, which was obviously helpful. Again, the enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Not necessarily good at pitching, but just good at talking about how exciting it could all be.
I think it should be such a part of design courses and graphic design and
totally.
Communications.
Yeah.
How to sell an idea and how to get people on board.
Well,
with
my
this.
Feeling is, and it's been really interesting recently, perhaps as an aside, but talking to Ethan, who's just started, about a year ago, talking to him about pitching and presentations, I don't view it as selling ideas.
Yeah.
I'd view it as you just take them through why you got to where you got to.
The word sales has got a really bad reputation, hasn't it?
I agree.
It always makes me think of like double glazing salesmen trying to sell grannies.
Yeah, telling something
they
don't really need and
but
all that.
It's not. It's just getting people on board with your thinking.
Yeah, totally. But how did you get to that point?
Absolutely.
And if you're really honest about that, however badly you present it, they'll understand.
Yeah.
And you take them through the stages of how you got to this, and you show them sketches and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So we did this presentation. It went really well. And they're the Salvation Army generals who run it. There's like eight of them or something, all sitting there in their uniforms.
Yeah.
And Dave and I left and I went to sign out. And you can obviously, which I do quite often, you see who you're pitching against because they've signed into this book. And John McConnell was in reception.
Oh, wow.
And we'd basically shown at least half of our presentation with pentagram signs from this book.
Yes.
And so I remember thinking, shit, that's the end of that project. And we left. And then, 2 weeks later, they phoned up, said, we'd like to give you the job.
Fantastic.
We could not believe it. I mean, you know, I would have given it to pentagram, no doubt about it. And what was interesting, just again, that's sort of an aside, when we got to know them a bit, and I remember saying to the architect who put us in touch with me, you know, out of interest, why did you give it to us?
Yeah.
Without trying to sound too bemused.
Yeah. And he surprised himself.
He said, because you came in and talked about our project. And he said, we know all the people on the list would be able to do the job. He said, that's what we thought. And I was thinking, well, I'm not sure we thought that particularly.
Yeah.
Whereas other people had come in and just said, here's a load of signing projects we've done. And he said, we were interested in the fact what you thought we were looking for. So we didn't show them any solutions, but we showed them lots of things that they might be able to do.
Yeah.
About their project. And that's why we won that job, you know.
Brilliant.
And I still keep that in mind now, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was the first job. We won that huge project. It's the building that's on the end of the Wobbly Bridge, Millennium Bridge.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Signage is now almost 20 years old. It's all still up.
Brilliant.
It was an amazing project to do. And it was that whole sort of, we thought we'll get enough advice about how to do it.
Yeah.
We could do it, and we did do it, but we were completely out of our depth to start. But that was a good thing, and naive but enthusiastic,
I think.
So it was that one. Then the Natural History Museum approached us.
That's great.
For their identity. That was a very wise, they went to talk to lots of people.
Yeah.
And then Gareth and I went to talk to them before we got shortlisted. And they kept introducing us to people who'd worked for the Tate, right?
Yes.
We hadn't worked for the Tate. And we never denied it, but we never said we had. They obviously confused us with someone else. And which
you
I
just
think,
remained silent during
yeah,
those
exactly,
times.
Those moments.
Rolled to them.
But that just carried on all the way through. Every time we got presented to the trustees, the Tate would get mentioned. And like Gareth and I would just look at each other and think, well, that's, you know, that's what they think, you know. And we never really got to the bottom of that. I think they confused us with MB Studio, who I know quite well now.
Yeah, but, of course, yeah.
But again, we ended up getting shortlisted, and then that was a pitch between us, Interbrand and the partners.
Oh, wow.
And Agenda, I think.
That's pretty high-level stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, we were there as a wild card, new agency, very enthusiastic, lots of experience, but not experience in that sector and things like that.
Yeah.
And then, so we went to pitch for that. Again, credentials, not work, although some of the other agencies did show work, interestingly. And got the job. Again, asked them a bit later, how did we get it? And they said, you were the most enthusiastic people in the room.
Brilliant.
By miles. And we all sat there thinking, the design team particularly, how great it would be to work with us.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Because they wouldn't be told what to, you know, we wanted to work collaboratively. I mean, we just said anything we needed to say to try and get the job. And we somehow we won that job. And it was just
That's really
amazing.
High profile.
Amazing.
Yeah,
and
brilliant.
It's just been changed.
So that's the Marina Willer Pentagram
and that's
Stuart getting, Nomad worked on the reach.
20 years almost.
Wow. That's brilliant. So, I love the rebrand now, actually.
Yes,
as well,
yes, no, absolutely. And it needed to change and all those sorts of things, but it was interesting, you know, that we managed to get it. And that sort of, that combined with Salvation Army. And then the last one was Land Securities. That was through somebody called Jan Casey. She'd been to see us when we'd literally just set up. She'd left Lambie Nairn and became a sort of really good friend and consultant to Hattrick. And she really helped us, you know, form the company and all sorts of things. So that's the other bit I'd say was really important.
Yeah, okay.
Piece of advice that she came in as a sort of consultant, advisor, coach. I still see her now once a week.
Do you?
Yeah,
wow, that's
as
good.
A coach. And is brilliant. I wouldn't be here now without
yeah,
her.
Yeah, that's really good.
Absolutely. But she came to see us, and then 6 months later got in touch and said, I'm seeing a client. They're really interested. The project is having a bit of a sort of a moment in some ways, and they're interested to talk to somebody else.
Yeah.
Can you come for a meeting in like an hour? And I thought, well, yes, you know, put together a few slides and went to see them. It turned out to be Land Securities, which is a big property company.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that became our biggest client for, you know, 12 years or something.
Wow, that's great.
Got on with them really well. I did that presentation with Dave and they just gave us this enormous job straight after.
Wow.
Very much through Jan's recommendation.
Yeah.
And then got on with them really well. Became their sort of lead agency on the roster that Jan set up, and that sort of just led to more and more work. So
yeah, good to get in one of those big companies, really, isn't it?
And really lovely work, really lovely people.
Yeah,
and I think it's the only well, it's not the only job we did, but we generally, which is very much true now, but didn't do any sort of bread and butter projects that just paid the bills that weren't very good. I think our success was sort of based on. Every job that came along, however big or small, we just thought, what can we get out of this? Quite selfishly in some ways. And so we tried to push everything as much as possible. So.
Yeah, works for you and works for the client. So I've heard you say previously in talks that basically you ended up taking a sabbatical for your own company.
Yes, yes.
And then that became longer and longer.
Yes.
And so you started setting up Studio Sutherland. What happened there? What's the...
So after about 7 years, we were doing really well. Dave left. Mutually, I think it was feeling like the three of us were not quite all doing the same things. And in the end, Dave decided to leave. Gareth and I carried on. And then it got to 13 years. In the summer, I just started to think the joy had gone out of it a bit.
Yeah, it can happen.
And it wasn't a big company. You know, we got up to about 15 at maximum,
yeah, okay.
I think. Still punching above our weight in terms of the projects we were doing and lovely work, amazing team of people.
Yeah.
But there was something that was just like the joy had gone out and I just started to feel like I wasn't enjoying it as much.
Yeah.
So that's this little thought escaped that I could have a sabbatical. I'd never had more than 2 weeks off since I'd been working.
Wow.
Which was at that point, 20 odd years or something. And I thought, well, that would be an interesting thing, partly because of the work ethic, but also just there never seemed to be enough time to do those sorts of things or money or... So I thought, well, maybe I could have a sabbatical. I didn't even know what it was. I had to sort of look it up. But, you can have time off that you're not paid for. Or sometimes you are in a company. And and then I thought, well, that'd be interesting. How long could that be? Maybe it could be like a month. I remember thinking, oh, a month off, that'd be incredible. And then I thought, that's not quite enough. So maybe it should be 3 months. Then this little thought got bigger. And then I knew what I was like, particularly with the designers and the projects, that I would worry about them. Yeah. I worry a lot, generally, more than I should. And I started to think maybe I would be sitting at home trying to do nothing, which I knew I wouldn't be able to do, but worrying about what was going on.
Yeah.
So then I had the thought that maybe I could have a sabbatical and not go back.
Yes.
And then, and then realise that's leaving. So so I left. And it, interestingly, in a quite a short, that was perhaps autumn, so this time of year.
Yeah.
And then at Christmas, I told Gareth I was just going to leave. That didn't go well. And I left sort of 3 months later.
Wow.
So it was less than 6 months from that thought escaping to doing it.
Yeah.
I think I'm quite, I think once my mind's made up about
something. Once you know
that thought
would happen. You're not
going
to be the best person for the job.
Yeah. So then I left the name, all the people, all the clients, deliberately so that I didn't have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
We obviously had made, you know, a decent amount of money, so that really helped. We bought a building, which we then sold.
Yeah, that's good.
So that helped. And so my plan was to have a year off.
Yeah.
At that point, the whole idea had expanded to
yes.
And then about maybe a month, my lounge had become a studio. We'd moved the lounge downstairs. We'd moved up to London when the kids went to college.
Uh-huh.
So I could walk to work. And then obviously I left work, so, having borrowed quite a lot of money and things. But so did that. And then just started to carry on. Well, not started, just carried on doing my own little side projects, which I do quite a lot of and still do.
Yeah.
And I'd started doing them at Hattrick and was really enjoying them. And they, I think, were always good for Hattrick's press and all that sort of stuff. But they were mainly just good fun to do. So carried on doing some of those. Didn't do any paid work for probably about 6 months. And the plan was not to do any. But then the odd job, old clients got back in touch and I would tell them I wasn't working yet.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting, I've realised now, actually, the more desperate you are, the less likely you are to get projects.
Oh, definitely.
Whereas the
Say
less...
Actually, no,
I haven't got time
we'll
to do that.
Attract a load of people.
Yeah, attracts more people, which I find weird, but it absolutely happened, you know. And so maybe about 6 months in... it might be a bit more, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the timelines. But anyway, Royal Mail got in touch and we'd done quite a lot of work, stamp work for them when I was at Hattrick. Dean got in touch and said, how are things? I'd done a little book launch of a side project I'd been doing, the Graphic Lexicon, and I'd invited some old clients and things. But when I was there, I was very much saying to them, I'm not working yet. I'm still having a bit of work out what to do. Do I want to set up a new studio? I knew I did, but I didn't. It wasn't doing it to get work. It was doing it because I wanted to do this book.
Yeah.
And then, but Dean had come and he got in touch and said, are you working now? Are you still mucking about? And I said, I'm still mucking about, thanks. And he said, that's a shame. He goes, you've got a really nice briefing. And I just thought, you fucker. I knew I'd say, well, why don't you say, he hadn't sent it to me.
Yeah, you can't just be like, keep it.
So he sent me this brief, which was for Agatha Christie, the stamp set we ended up doing.
Right, I see.
Which is always a pitch, always quite complicated, always hard to get ideas through.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so relaxed. I thought, yeah, great, okay. And you get paid to do the pitch.
Yeah.
So I did some work on it, sent it all off to him, had a few meetings. It then goes to this SAC meeting, you know, a month later or something.
Yeah.
Didn't forget about it, but I thought, well, you know, I worked really hard on it and I pushed it quite hard. And Dean was keen to do something interesting. So I thought, well, I won't show anything safe. I'll just show, I think we should try and do these things.
Yeah.
And, but I thought there's no way it will go through. And then I was out somewhere doing something, I can't remember. And he phoned up and he said, they've all gone through.
Wow.
And normally there's like another stage. And he said, no, they've all gone through. We just need to go with it.
That's brilliant. That's so good.
So that was amazing. And that really set me off again, sort of up and running again. So.
Yeah, definitely. You suddenly start
and then it
momentum.
Sort of started on from there. And I worked from home for a few years, had a studio at home. Beck was working in the studio next door as an illustrator. I had a really nice, just a really nice time.
Yeah,
doing
that
stuff.
Sounds good.
Much more relaxed. Obviously, the overheads are much less. Didn't have any employees.
Yeah.
All of that was really good. And then Alice came to see me, who was a designer at Hattrick, who was really good. He's really good. And just for a bit of advice, she was going to go and study again or freelance or something like that. She came in and this was when I was still in my sabbatical sort of period. And I said, well, I'm working on this book. Why don't you come and help me work on this book? And so she came in and just freelanced for a bit, on and off. Then she got offered a job somewhere else and a full-time job, and she'd accepted it. And I remember thinking, oh, I should have kept her because she was brilliant. But I'd had this thing in my mind that I wasn't employing anybody. So there was a sort of stopping myself. So I remember thinking, oh, that's a shame. But thinking, well, maybe that's a sign that I should get someone, because I was really enjoying working with her, even if it was at home in a small room sort of thing. So then about a month later, she'd started work at this place. And I met her for lunch just to say thanks, or dinner, and to say thanks for all her hard work. And I just remember saying to her, you know, if you decide to move on, or at some point, you know, I feel like I should have offered you a job.
Yeah.
But I don't want to poach you. I'm not interested in, you know, doing anything untoward sort of thing. And then she said, well, you would be poaching me because I'd come and work for you tomorrow.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, okay. So I said, well, let's think about it over the weekend. And she said, I don't need to think about it over the weekend. So I said, well,
that's great.
Let's think about it over the weekend. And then on Monday, she resigned and then started work a couple of weeks later.
Wow.
She then stayed for 2 more years, which was brilliant. Then she moved on. And then I met Rosie Trickett through a friend of mine. Again, just sort of coincidentally, just as Alice said she was going to move on and go freelance. She's now moved to Japan for a while. She's doing a course there. Rosie came in again just for a bit of advice, I was thinking, well, I don't know who to, you know, I didn't know who to get in, or I just thought I need to get someone to replace Alice, who was amazing. And then Rosie came just for a bit of advice through a friend the week after Alice had said she was moving on. And so I didn't interview Rosie, but I saw her portfolio and I gave her loads of advice, places to go, whilst I was thinking, you should come here.
Yes.
But then I remember thinking, I think it's this thing about my dad, sort of about doing things properly. I thought, well, that's not why she's come, and I don't want to...
Yeah.
It's not what she's asked for. She's asked to come for some advice about places to go. So I said nothing, and then she left. And I thought, why didn't I just say something? So anyway, I thought, no, but that's not why she'd come. So I then sent her a list of places that I recommended, that people I knew, which comes back to that thing of all the people you know and everybody you see leads on to other things.
Definitely.
If you behave properly, you know, if you do stuff properly and you
treat people in the way.
Treat people in the right way. The right way,
absolutely.
So then I emailed her and said, you know, these are the places. And then she emailed back and said, thanks very much. And then I said, I thought, okay, perhaps I should say something. So I emailed her again after I'd done the introductions and things, saying, actually, I'm going to be looking, but it might not be for you because it's me in a room.
You know,
like the work is nice and all that sort of stuff, but it's not like a big company with loads
not
of people.
Not busy agency type thing.
Yeah, and it's in the house at that point. And she emailed straight back, said I would definitely be interested. I said, well, come in for a chat. And I tried to put her off for about half an hour. And then, because it is in, you know, it's quite intense. But but she was brilliant. And then so she resigned. She was at the Partners. Again, that connection with the Partners.
Yeah.
And then she started work. She stayed for 5 years.
Wow.
Left last summer to have a baby. She's now set up her own agency.
Brilliant.
And so Ethan then started
as
cover for Rosie initially, but now Rosie's not coming back. He's staying here.
Ah, that's
great.
Well,
I hope he is anyway.
Yeah.
So it is just set up in the studio now of me and one person.
Yeah.
Which
it's
love.
It's a great studio.
Yeah. Really. And then we moved to here about four years ago, just pre-COVID, when Rosie was still here. And then obviously COVID hit. So I bought a very, well, not that small, but a space around the corner from where I live.
Yeah.
So I can walk here. And it's you know, 900 square feet. There's only two of us in it.
Yeah, you've got a lot of space. It's really cool there. It's really bright.
It's a lovely, airy space. It's lovely to be here. I liked working from home, actually, but having a bit more space. I view it as my sort of garage, really, just pop in and
definitely
do stuff at weekends and things like that.
So, posh garage.
Yeah, posh garage, yeah. So, yes, that's sort of where we are now, really.
So what have you got, ways? What inspires you as a designer? Have you got specific things that does or do?
I think I follow the design industry quite a lot. I read a lot of design annuals and books and magazines, things like that. But I've realised that actually it's things outside of that, films and music and art. I go to exhibitions and galleries all the time.
Yeah.
We do a lot of work in the cultural sector, so I use that as a bit of an excuse just to trawl through galleries around Europe and things.
Yeah.
I have a notebook which I constantly scribble things in.
Well, that's what I was going to say, from looking at your Instagram and seeing you do talks and stuff, just looking down at the pavements and stuff like
that. Yeah, totally. So just looking around, and it's that I get inspired all the time. And it's funny, I was saying to Ethan the other day, I find it really interesting that you have certain projects on. If you go to a gallery, there'll be something in that gallery relevant to that project.
Yeah, interesting.
Because you're looking.
You draw out the right
things. You draw out the right things. And actually, for me, it makes the experience of going around the gallery almost more interesting, because I've got a reason to look for stuff.
Yeah.
So whether it's about shapes or colours, or you think, well, that's an interesting combination. So I look around a lot. I'm not a photographer by any means, but I use my phone and take pictures of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And it's partly the reason I like things like Instagram, because I just post stuff all the time.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
And I remember, funny enough, talking to...
Is it Vicky?
It was Vicky, that's right.
Yeah, that's
because she said, because it's so genuine. You know?
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's genuine because it's me. It's like I've got some person doing my Instagram account. But it's sort of, and obviously because the size we are, you know, just the two of us, it can be like that. I don't have to get someone else to pretend to be the studio, you know, tone of voice and things.
Yes, definitely.
If I see a picture of a, you know, rubber band that looks like an ampersand, I'll take a picture of it and post it.
Yeah, I like it.
Which happens quite a lot, actually. But So I think that's the thing, stuff that inspires me. And also, it doesn't sound very complicated, but it's the projects that come in.
You know,
like the stuff we're doing at the moment, some of the, they're so exciting. You just get inspired by it. Like tomorrow we're going down to film this guy who's making some jeans. We're getting involved with this new jean company, like sustainable jean company. Really interesting sort of project. Doing it for no money. We're just going to be involved with it in some form.
Yeah, okay.
And tomorrow we're going to go down to his workshop and film him making jeans.
Oh, that's cool. That's,
you know.
And that's I always bang on about this, but one of the things I just love about working with designers, you just learn new stuff all the time.
Oh, exactly. Like, and every 2 weeks. Totally. So you look at the moment, you know, we're doing Symphonia, we're doing this big dental company, we're doing this jean thing, we're helping set up a new bike company. It's all sorts of stuff that's just amazing, almost too much. But as you say, every day you're just learning new stuff about stuff.
All
so that's what's
industries.
Inspiring. You know, Mohsin, who's the jean maker for these jeans, you know, he's a really well-known jean designer and speaker and things. And he's got this workshop down in Three Bridges somewhere. And I've been down there a couple of times now, but it's just full of machines and denim. And he's just a complete sort of nerd about the whole thing in a really good way. How can you not be inspired by that?
Definitely, yeah.
Even if it's not something you knew you were interested in. That's what's saying.
Yeah,
as a career.
Definitely.
That you're every week you're doing something in a new area, which is just amazing, you know. And if you, it comes back to, if you do those sorts of projects, like cultural projects or signage projects, you get more of those projects in, so it becomes quite self-fulfilling in some ways.
Absolutely.
So
can I ask you about the design industry?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on the design industry? Do you feel part of it? You seem very much part of it to me, but
I think it's an amazing community of design. Generally, designers, very few exceptions, are really nice people.
Completely agree.
And they're nice to be around. I probably spend too much time around designers, potentially. If I go anywhere on holiday, I go and visit designers while I'm there.
Yeah.
Even if I don't know them, because you just know that they'll give you some thoughts about places to go in that city. I do that. So I remember I talked to you when I went to LA recently, and I went to some designers there.
Yeah.
People in San Francisco and things like that. So for me, that community is wonderful. It's something that should be sort of cultivated, which is partly why being part of Typographic Circle is good.
Yes.
Because it's a sort of club almost, or
a
very open sort of membership. So that side of the design industry is really good.
I like it.
I think the side I don't like is the slightly cynical, critical side. You know, new projects get launched and everybody
jumps on them
and attacks them.
Yeah.
But I think that's just the nature of it. And it's also the nature of work that you do loads of stuff and criticise it yourself. So it's in your nature to criticise everything everyone else does.
Yeah, it's true.
But I feel there's not, for me, enough celebration of the jobs that are really good. It's partly why
I agree.
Like, I was judging DNAD this year. And again, I love that journey, really, from DNAD being my introduction to the design world back in 88 to... you know, now judging branding.
Yeah, that's great.
Being a foreman of the branding jury. But I was really keen this year when we did that to celebrate the work rather than criticise it all and throw it all out.
Yeah.
Which I think is easy to do. And so that's the only side of the design industry I don't like so much. It can be quite critical.
Yeah.
The other bit of the design industry I don't like, I'm not sure this is part of the question, but is the hard work nature of, we've all got to sweat, blood, and you know, blood and tears,
you're not
and
working in ridiculous hours. Hours. It's not,
I'm not interested in
that. Ridiculous.
And to me, it's not hard work. You work hard, but I mean, it's an absolute privilege to do this as a job. I mean,
yeah.
And people pay you. And I look back at working in the evenings for a packaging company and just think, someone was paying me to do this. And you get little freelance jobs, and obviously at that point you got paid in cash, and somebody would give you 500 quid for doing something, and you think, really? You know, and I think doing the labouring work for my brother and stuff, where you'd get nothing like 500 quid, it'd actually be really hard work.
Yeah.
Has made me, looking back now I think about it, it's made me realise it is such a brilliant job to do.
Definitely.
And it should be good fun. And
yeah.
It is good fun. And often you meet a lot of people, and I definitely got a bit like this at Hattrick, that, oh, we're too busy, we've got too much on, you know, a bit stressed. We did get stressed, you know.
Yeah.
Then when I set up again, I thought, I'm not doing that again. This is really good fun.
Yes,
it's hard work, and I do work really hard, and I work a lot. And I do wake up in the middle of the night and scribble ideas down, and all the sort of cliches of those sorts of things. You know, I go on holiday and I'll go to galleries to see stuff, but it's there isn't much work-life balance. It's just work
it's
and life.
Part of your life. Yeah,
yeah,
I get that.
It's part
completely.
Of my life, yeah, totally, yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same about it.
Yeah,
I think that's
yeah. And if you're not, if it's not how you feel, then go and do something else. I
yeah.
mean, that sounds a bit hard, you know, but...
Well, yeah, you're not... Choose something that does make you feel like
yeah, that. Yeah, exactly.
If you can.
Yeah.
Can I finish by asking
yes.
you about tips for juniors today, tips for kids and art students and whatever starting
yes.
out? What would you? How would you advise them?
I think the running thing for me was about, I think, the enthusiasm and the sort of positivity about working. I think just, if I just think back to the last few years of the three designers I've had, they've all been relatively young,
yeah.
Not straight from college, but one or two years in sort of thing, has been their enthusiasm and their sort of willingness to sort of push things further, to really want to do the job.
Yeah.
You know, because there's only two of us, I've got to have someone around me like that lifts you when you're a bit, you know, up and down on projects, things like that.
Yeah.
So I think the enthusiasm for me is the main thing, if I'm really wanting to do it. I think also, I suppose I feel I was quite lucky to fall into what I really liked doing.
Yeah.
But I do feel if you really like doing, you're going to be really good at it.
Yeah.
Whereas if
I
you
agree.
Don't really want to do it, or you want to be doing something else, then try and go and do that.
Yeah.
It's not putting people off doing design, but I think you want to me, really want to do it. And when I go and teach, I think the reason I couldn't go into teaching full time, I find it quite difficult with students who are not that enthusiastic. And you
yeah.
feel like they just want to do this degree, but they're not. Again, it sounds critical, which is it's not really what I mean. Whereas the students that are really all over it, you straight away get that energy off them.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think the energy, enthusiasm, and it's the reason, as I say, Hattrick particularly was successful. I think it's because we were like that.
Yeah.
Like sort of Labradors, to use a dog analogy. I think there's that. Educated Labradors.
Yes.
We'd hope so. Yeah. I think the other thing is I went to a talk once. I'm trying to think who this was, but. And somebody said, you know, as students, what should we be learning, like in terms of software and programs and things like this? And he had a really good answer about you need to just learn how to learn, because the software we're using now will change next year.
Yeah, it's a really
so
good
I
point.
Think that adaptability and that just willingness to learn those things.
Yeah.
And being really open to that stuff, I think is, I don't like the whole being too dogmatic or too fixed. I think
yeah.
you've got to be quite flexible. And I think I look back at, you know, me leaving HGV that was doing really well, me leaving Hattrick that was doing really well, set up again, is a sort of restlessness of wanting to do something else. And I never viewed it as brave, because I viewed it as a sort of, well, I want to go and do this.
Yeah.
But I do think there's an element of, if you're too safe or too, well, I'm quite comfortable where I am, I'm earning enough money, I'll just stay here, I'm living
yeah.
it. But that depends on your own character, doesn't it? Some people want that.
Oh, yeah. So I think that restlessness is a really good way of
yeah.
describing it,
mm.
really.
Mm.
Just moving on to the next thing. And it could be the next thing within Studio Sutherland.
Yes, exactly.
Example,
exactly. Well, it's interesting now, because we're coming up to 10 years old, or 10 years since I left Hattrick, which I can't believe.
Yeah.
And I realise I can't leave now, because there's no one.
I can't leave your
I can't leave myself. You know?
Yeah, you really
so
can't.
I could leave Ethan here, but it's... And then what I'd be doing, I'd be doing something else. So it's sort of, but it's on my mind, because 10 years is coming up, thinking, well, what is the next chapter
yeah.
sort of here?
Anyway, but going back to the student thing, I think it's, and for me, it's that it does go back to, even though it's a long time ago now, in my portfolio, I just kept thinking, I want to put another job in my portfolio. I want to think of something else to put in my portfolio.
Yeah.
And then
there's
not
a gap.
Yeah. And then just keep thinking that, not, oh, I've got five projects, that's enough.
Yes, definitely.
Because it might be one of those little projects that really, you know, gets you that job.
Yeah.
You know, then for me, it was doing a letterhead, which was set as a project. But, you know, half my portfolio weren't really set as projects. They were just competitions that were around and stuff like that. And it, yes, it needed editing down, and it was just this mass of stuff. But that's what Nick saw, and that's how he gave me a job.
Yeah, doing loads of really good work, lots of ideas.
Just lots of ideas. For me, it was lots of ideas. And if that's your passion, then do that. And if your passion is about typography, then just do loads and loads of typography.
Yeah.
Because then the typographer will look at it and think, God, this person, you know, perhaps isn't going to be there yet, but what he wants to do this.
Yeah.
So somehow I suppose you can't force that enthusiasm, but it will come across,
yeah,
I think, somehow. But it has to be genuine, I suppose that's the...
Yeah. I think,
but if you can be as quiet and as shy as me and manage to get a job anywhere, you know, it was just from hiding behind the work. And I'm quite celebratory of that in some ways. And I'm obviously better at doing public speaking and meetings and stuff now.
Yeah.
But the work really still needs to be up there.
Yeah.
Because then you can always hide behind it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good driving force.
Yeah. So...
Thank you so much.
That's all right. It's a pleasure.
I've really enjoyed this.
Good. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Good. Thank you very much.